Hello and welcome to the Hornets and Heartbreak podcast. My name is Mark Bernanke and I'm here with my co-host, Tim Rogers. What's up, Tim?
What it do, Liquor Mark?
I'm doing pretty well, man. We are joined today by Sam Smith, a previous guest of the podcast, Sam Dracula on YouTube. He's got 4,500 subscribers on YouTube. He has the best Hornets YouTube channel. Also runs the Believe in Hornets podcast. So welcome, Sam.
Oh, you're too kind. You're too kind. 4.8 subscribers.
4.8.
Oh, I changed me, man.
I checked.
I'm out here on the streets, man.
It was 4,500 when I checked a couple of days ago.
Influencer.
All right, we're gonna get started today with a Blaine power ranking. So what we're doing is we are ranking the five Hornets players, coaches, GMs, owners, whatever you want to do, for who's to blame for the Hornets 4-13 stretch and just sort of a disappointing season. So we have five players, or like I said, coaches or GMs ranked. Let's get started with the fifth person on your list, Sam.
Oh man, I just got to I got to preface this by saying that it's everybody's fault. I have to say that before anyone gets pissed about any of these players in any order, this is literally everybody's fault. The inconsistency on both ends is frustrating. So this may be a little bit harsh, but my Gordon Hayward is number five.
Okay.
The absence of Hayward speaks to the value of Hayward, but you can't talk about this team's recent dip without mentioning the missing Gordon Hayward. Jalen McDaniels to a lesser degree, but this team hasn't been at full strength yet with the addition of Harrell, and we'll see what happens to Isaiah Thomas. But this is one of those where we got to see what this team really looks like to really grade it. And
yes,
so yeah, that's mine.
So I actually didn't have him on my list because I don't know. Can you blame Gordon Hayward for getting hurt every year when that's been his career pretty much the entirety of his career? Right, he does seem to get hurt every season. So in fifth, I actually have Mitch Kupchak. And on the whole, Mitch has been a fantastic GM for the Hornets, but I have him explicitly for the Gordon Hayward thing. Gordon Hayward, $30 million is just a little bit too much. And we knew he was going to get hurt. He doesn't really fit in with the timeline of the team. Gordon, when he's healthy, has been great, right? But that's the thing, is when he's healthy. He's played 66% of all the games for the Hornets, and that's just not enough. It's not worth that contract, $30 million. And I mean, obviously, this injury was a freak accident. And we've talked about Gordon a lot on the podcast. It's not his fault, right? But he does just have a tendency to get hurt. And you have to factor that in when you're signing players and putting together a roster. So I put Kupchak at fifth, even though, like I said, on the whole, he's been great. He's done a lot of great things for the Hornets. I have little bad things to say about Mitch, but that's where the majority of the blame can go in terms of assembling this roster that's putting together this season. The future is bright, but this season has not been good. And I think that Mitch gets a little bit of the blame there.
Yeah, I have Mitch on my list as well, a little higher up. One thing, it's not his fault. He's not setting the rotations, but it is kind of worrisome that he just likes to throw these flyers on second round centers, none of which have panned out. The fact that we are at essentially the 7-man, 8-man rotation for much of the season, it's not like we're expecting big splashy free agents to sign here, but yeah, going in with the Gordon thing, you had to know that was going to happen. And that's just an opportunity cost to paying someone $30 million, harp on it all the time. But I think that if he really believed in LaMelo and where he was going to go, he accelerated the timeline a little too much, similar to what Dell Demps did in New Orleans around Anthony Davis. And instead of just waiting around and being a little worse last year, maybe getting the 7th pick, getting someone like my man, Franz Wagner, in the mix at, a tenth of the cost almost. It's just not great GM work around the margins.
Gotcha. Who do you have at fifth, Tim?
I hate to do this, and yeah, nothing personal. I'm going with Miles. Not his fault. We've asked him to really carry a lot of the weight, especially with Jalen going out and Gordon. But yeah, he has 3 months this season shooting below 30% from three. He's very indecisive driving to the basket now. He just seems like a guy who's really in his own head and sometimes can't get out of his own way. So I have him number five.
Sam, what are your thoughts on that? On Miles Bridges being on Tim's list?
I think that's fair. He's on my list too. Gotcha. The 27% from three is tough. Last 15 games, you know, he's averaging just under six three attempts per game last 15 games, and it's 27% in those. You know, from the field, he's all right, 46% during that stretch. But you know, he's playing 37. Like he's playing more than anybody, right? So he has plenty of opportunity to take more shots, but the percentages aren't falling with it, and it's kind of a ball stopper at times. I love Miles. But yeah, I think you can look at him as one of the most important players on the team, underperforming as a reason why, honestly. Like, you bear the weight of that when the team isn't getting the results.
Agreed. Yeah, he's fourth on my list, and it's basically just the shooting for me. Like, you said some other things. It's just the shooting. Like, 25% from three over the past 17 games. I think you said 27 over the past 15. Over the past 17, it's even worse. And he's just destroying our spacing offensively. In like recent games, the Nets or somebody had the DeAndre Jordan out there on him, right? And then in the most recent game against the Celtics, they were just not guarding him from three, and that's hurting the whole flow of the offense. He needs to be able to hit threes like he was last year, 40%. That was awesome. He's really regressed as a shooter, and that's an issue. It's just an issue for our team's offense and spacing.
Yeah, those shooting numbers, you know, Andre Roberson sitting in China right now, like, I could probably do that.
Yeah, no, but other than that, he's been great. And obviously, he's like an MIP candidate, but his MIP candidacy has fallen to the wayside with the bad shooting. Like, if you were shooting 40%, maybe he actually would win the award.
It's that tough leap players have to deal with when the volume goes up, maintaining that percentage. Yes. Miles had that early on in the year. It was actually weird and like really impressive that he was able to double his volume and maintain percentage. Like, it was like, holy hell, like, we got something special here.
He's an all-star, no doubt.
Yeah. But that's just really hard to sustain as we're experiencing. And then also, you know, when they're getting blown out and they're just chucking up threes, that's going to kill your percentage as well. So yeah, listen, Miles is one of the most important players on the squad. So it falls on your shoulders. It's part of the game. Game's a game.
Who you got fourth, Sam?
I'm tossing Mason, big money Mace in it. I think Mason gets a lot of unnecessary heat. I think anyone who's disappointed in Mason Plumlee has never watched Mason Plumlee. Like, it's exactly what we got. You know, outside of the free throw, like, is this really why he's on the list? Because the free throws, I'm honest with you. Because you know, he was never a good. He's like a historically bad free throw shooter. But for him to go from like 60 something last year to 30 something this year, that's insane from the free throw line. That's such a bummer. He's unplayable in crunch time because you just foul him and kill the Hornets possession, which is an issue because Nick Richards isn't quite ready for crunch time minutes. Harrell's undersized. PJ's undersized. It really, when you're the veteran 7-footer on the squad can't play in crunch time, it's an issue. And
yeah.
I believe in Mason. I think he can turn on and around the free throws. When he makes the first one of the night and then goes 1-for-4, I take those. That's where we're at now. Like last night, when we played the Celtics, he made that first one of the night. I was like, here we go, Mason. He's heating up. Then no, not so much. But I'm going Plumlee there. I'm going Plumlee there.
Yeah, I didn't have him on my list, but like, Definitely could be on my list. I don't really know why. I'm kind of regretting not having him on there. We should have six people
in the car. Yeah, it's an honorary Mason vote. One thing that's weird, because I'm a believer that free throws for the most part is like a mental thing. I think like the bigs with big hand, that's been like debunked by the time. Like, and you look at someone like Giannis last year in the playoffs, he was having the struggles. It was like the hottest topic to talk about. Man, he takes 15 seconds. So I see where the mental strain would come in there. Mason's gone from Detroit to Charlotte. No one's paying attention to it at all. And yet mentally, that guy is just gone at the line.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so weird too, because that move, so Oubre, right? No one, he's not a shooter, but he comes to Charlotte. He's having the best shooting career he's ever had. It worked for him. And then for Plumlee on the flip side, just fell off a cliff from way closer to the basket. It's the weirdest thing.
Agreed. Tim, who you got fourth?
This is another player, and you know, I put a lot on him just because, you know, these are our two most important players. I have Melo fourth. especially since the All-Star break. I think he's been more bad than good. Terrible shot selection, mainly in that Detroit game. He almost shot us out of the game. We ended up losing by 1 point to Kelly Olynyk. Just terrible. Yeah, and he just seems to, I don't know if the league has figured him out somewhat. I think he just played his 82nd game, so one full season under his belts. Yeah, the Celtics seem to have a really solid plan for him after he kind of torched them earlier in the season. He was just kind of driving into nowhere multiple times, a little too reliant on his jump shot. And yeah, I just think that, you know, he had that nice leap early on, but now I'm kind of pushing it off towards next season, hoping that that's when he starts putting it all together.
Sam, you got thoughts on that?
Yeah, Melo's been like really sloppy last few games too. Like, you know, he's a little primary ball handler. You got to set the tempo, which he's excellent at, pushing the pace. That's kind of how this team was constructed. He suits that perfectly. But when you mentioned this poor shot selection, that just kills momentum, man. When this team, this is a broader issue. This team has to bust their ass to get stops, right?
Yeah.
And when the other team gets an offensive rebound and it gets an easy putback, that's a soul crusher, right? When you get a stop and have a sloppy turnover pass or bad shot, that kills it. Like it's been one step forward, two steps back kind of run this Hornets squad's been through. And again, when you're one of the best players on the team, that falls on you. And Melo plays his part in that. There's plenty of positives with it, but like you mentioned, man, it's an issue. It falls on his shoulders.
Yeah, people are going to be touting you as like this generational passer. You can't have multiple games where you have more turnovers than assists. And right. Yeah, like, you know, that feeds into defense as well. And then, you know, our defense has been a little better, but yeah, like, you know, how do you get fast break opportunities? It's through defense.
Yeah, he had six turnovers in the first half against the Celtics on Wednesday, which was just brutal. Like, he just, like, forgot how to dribble on two consecutive possessions. And then to play body language doctor a little bit, like, he's been having some rough body language out there on the court in games where we're getting blown out. He just seems to check out a little bit recently. I would say specifically since the All-Star break, he's been rough. Third, I got Cody Martin, who Sam was a stand for last time on the podcast.
He's my favorite twin.
You said you'd take Cody over Caleb. You would take Cody over Caleb?
Oh, yeah. Listen, I'm a Cody stan till I die, all right? Caleb's been crushing it, you know? My Caleb beef was him trying to run the half-court offense last year. I like Caleb, Mark. But Cody was like an excellent role player last year, and then coming into this year, where he's like leading the league in shooting out of nowhere. Was it an injury or was it COVID? We missed him, and then since he's been back, it's been rough.
Yeah, I think like before Christmas, he was shooting like 50% on threes, and then after Christmas, it's like 25% on threes. So pretty brutal since he got COVID. And yeah, it's just the shooting, and like with Gordon Hayward out, his replacements have been bad. That's like the people who play small forward have been bad since Gordon Hayward's been out. And Cody Martin just, you know, kind of nothing offensively. He has probably like worse ball handling than most anyone else on our team outside of like the centers. Defensively, he's good. You know, he's been great defensively. He still has those hustle plays and he contributes there, but I think he just gets too many minutes. Like he should be a 15 minute per game kind of player. And when he's playing more minutes than that, it's rough offensively. So yeah, that's why I have Cody Martin on my list. I think that, like I said, with Gordon Hayward out, it's been on the replacement small forwards to step up, and they've gone the other way.
Yeah, no, like riding the Oubre wave is an emotional journey. Oof. Not many are prepared to take on. Because when he's on, no one can touch him. But there's a lot that's not, you don't know that. You don't know what you're going to get. And I think that's the smart moves Brego did is like with Hayward out, having PJ in the five. And then you can kind of moderate. You can take your Oubre as needed versus the extended minutes he was getting previously.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
Which I don't blame him for. I think it's our fault for like relying too much on Oubre, but that's all.
Yeah, I think Oubre would have to be the scariest guy to coach because like he can easily win you games. Like just by himself, he's good for a six, three half every now and then. But woo, man, when he makes his first two shots, it's almost like the worst thing that can happen because you're like, oh, he is pulling now.
Tim, who you got there?
This is it's a little bit of a hot take here. But calling for some accountability, I have James Booknight. here. A lot of people will put it on JB, and I think he does have some say in this. But I think the Book Knight's been a mess. Like, he's pretty much been the worst parts of Malik Monk and not having as many flashes. You know, going at James Borrego on the bench and having to get escorted out is really embarrassing. Getting kicked out of a UConn game. Yeah, it just seems like his head is not in the right place. He hasn't even been putting up, like, great numbers in the G League. Like, they've been fine. But yeah, I think that he has to take some responsibility, and he's a reason why Cody is getting these 25 minutes a game, because he's not ready and he's not putting in the work by all accounts.
Sam, thoughts on that?
Yeah. You know, if you're gonna, if you like, you know, after the draft, you kind of like roadmap the season, like, okay, take this guy 11th overall. He's kind of a psychopath, like Terry Rozier. Like, you got the heir apparent right there. And then all of a sudden, Cody steps up, Jalen steps up. They sign Oubre. It's like, all right, well, the perimeter got really crowded really quickly.
Yeah.
And for Book Knight's win, like, chance was when they traded Ish, right? Because that was like, I opened up a spot in the backcourt. And whatever, for all the reasons you just listed, didn't happen. You know, they had to sign Isaiah Thomas. Now, Book Knight, I think, short-term and long-term, his biggest opportunity is to develop his ball handling ability as a creator for others, because I mean, that was the biggest knock coming into the league, right? And then having him as the third guard long term sounds pretty good to me, but as of right now, he's definitely not there yet. And that's why, man, people are like, why is he in going back and forth between Charlotte and Greensboro? He's not ready, and it's okay, not to be ready. Just give some time, you know. But yeah, I don't blame Book Knight per se for this. But I'm with you. It has been frustrating, disappointing.
Yeah, I think you make a great point about the offseason, where, yeah, it's like, you know, we take him 11th overall. It's like, oh, well, he's clearly just going to be at first guard off the bench. Devontae leaves town. Oh, this is awesome. Signs Terry Rozier to a 4-year contract. As soon as you hear that, you got to be like, damn, dude, I kind of thought this would be like, I'd be starting in 2 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see what happens with that. Yeah, you know, hopefully the jump shot looks good. I've always been a believer, even though he shot like 29% his last year. Yeah, the ball handling, I think, is a perfect take, because like when it works, like his finishes look so good. But part of that is because his ball handling is pretty sloppy. So it's like almost a miracle when he pulls it off. You're like, wow.
Yeah.
Sam, who you got third?
I've had Melo and Miles next two. But I'm gonna switch it up. All right.
Okay.
My one is staying. Same
pack. Okay.
The Terry Rozier, the point guard.
Interesting.
So they trade Ish with the idea of Terry being able to slide over and cover, right? When LaMelo's out. It doesn't work. I love Terry Rozier. As the main facilitator, I don't think it works. I think it's really tough to watch. And I think it kills the half court offense. That's what I have to say. Terry Rozier otherwise has been good. He's been the best player the last like stretch of the season.
Yeah.
But Terry Rozier, the point guard, is a disappointment for me.
Interesting. I agree. That take.
Those are my least favorite lineups that we have, not involving Plumlee, is when it's like Terry, Cody, Kelly, PJ, and then one other player. It's like there's not a single competent passer in that entire group. Like, I don't know why Borrego is so beholden to thinking that that would work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that only works if you're getting stops and running the floor. That's not always doable.
Yeah, Terry and Kelly have to both be hot, and if one of them's hot, the other's not passing to the other. So it's just like you're not getting the full benefit of either one of those guys.
Number two, I got Kelly Oubre Jr. So over the past 17 games, he's shooting 27% from three, and he's averaging a plus minus of minus 4.5 per game. Compare that to somebody like Miles, who's at minus 0.8 over the same stretch. So like we're losing. So you expect it to be minus, but maybe not that big of a minus. And like body language, again, he just seems to like check out sometimes. And he basically is just pulling threes. He's not doing anything else offensively. And he's not making them. He's actually shooting more since he's been in this slump than he was when he was shooting well. And so he's shooting more and missing more. So I got hit number two. It's the same thing like with Cody Martin. Like the replacements for Gordon Hayward in the small forward spot have just been a mess. We need more out of that position. And yeah, like y'all said, like it's either hot or cold with Kelly, and recently it's been more of cold. Tim, you got two.
Yeah, I totally agree. Kelly Oubre, I'm also, I resent him because he makes me feel like my dad, where I'm just like, what is this guy doing? I was like, why is he shooting so often? Oh, he's got, you know, he's got like, you know, he's 6'7". Why doesn't he just take it to the basket? Oh, like all the dumb decisions like that. That play at the end of the third quarter against Boston where he fouls Tatum on like a loose ball foul while we're in the bonus with like 0.2 seconds. It's just like you don't see, you wouldn't see that in like a Division III college game. Like, where is your head at, dude?
Yeah. Yeah, he does just like check out sometimes. He just makes some dumb plays. So yeah, he's number two for me. I see the argument for like the more important players, like Melo also being on the list. I just didn't put Melo on the list because he's our best player. And I love Melo, so I couldn't do that to him. But yeah, I think the people who've been the worst is it's definitely like Kelly and Cody, like because they just aren't hitting shots and they're stopping our offense. And they might not take more of the blame. So like you could criticize my power rankings there because they aren't as important to the team, but they've been the worst on the team since in this stretch.
Yeah, because the Hornets have this weird issue, especially with the injuries, is like the role players are fast-tracked, right?
Yeah.
We're relying too much on these guys. So like Cody, like you mentioned Cody Martin, if instead of being the second or third guy off the bench, if he's your fourth or fifth guy off the bench, that's a way different team, right? The landscape of squads, really different. Is this kind of situation we're in with Borrego's kind of preferences plus injury issues is kind of where we're sitting.
All right. Who you got number one, Sam? Who's your number one person to play?
Oh, it's the coach. It's the coach. My biggest Borrego beef is the rotations or lack thereof, right? We go into the All-Star break on a 7-game losing streak. 6-game losing streak, right?
Yeah.
This team looked tired. They looked burnt out. Meanwhile, we're only playing 8, maybe 9 guys
a night. Yep.
And lo and behold, we get a week off. I know it's Detroit. Actually, sorry, it wasn't Detroit. It was Toronto. I misspoke. Yeah, we won losing streak, win one, beat Detroit, lose more, 3 more, and then get the All-Star break then, right? 2 old overtime games. Not that we needed more run. Extra basketball leading into the All-Star break. Get the week off and come back against Toronto and blow them out. Like, oh my God, what happens when the team is fully rested? We see what this team is fully capable of. That's not an accident. And so you can name guys. We have a lot of guys on this team. Like, it's not a super team by any means, but we have plenty of options. We don't see them on a regular basis. JT Thor has been a nice addition in the rotation. He's been the best rookie on the squad.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Jalen's going to come back. Hayward's going to come back. Do we go back to 8 men touching the floor again, right? Are we being slow to make adjustments? When they signed Harrell and they went big and it worked, it's like, whoa, JT Thor was out there with them. We have like, oh my God, we have options now. So I hope to see more of that. I think there's a reason we're in this position, not necessarily recently, but going into the All-Star break really put us behind the 8-ball and literally killed the momentum going into the break. So I put that on Borrego with the lack of switching up the rotation. It put us in a hole. And I don't know if this team's good enough to fight their all the way back out of it.
Yeah, I have him number one, too. And it's just playing too tight of a rotation, like you said, and particularly like early in the season. Now we have to win games to make the play-in tournament. But early in the season, like, why are Book Knight and Kai Jones not playing at all, right? Like, you don't see other teams with the 11th pick and the 19th pick rookies just not playing at all. And I mean, just generally playing too tight of a rotation, like you said. JT Thor, like, I think he played 0 meaningful minutes in the Celtics game. He played the last minute of the game, but basically 0 minutes otherwise. Like, nothing was working, so switch it up, right?
Exactly.
And I think mostly with Borrego before this season, you couldn't really criticize him. Like, you could say he was like playing mellow too little at the beginning of the season or whatever. But like everything was working. The team was overperforming, right? We were performing above the bar. But this is the first year where it's like there's actually some reason to criticize Borrego for this team. Like, Hornets Twitter thinks he's going to get fired. I don't think that's going to happen. But like it's a discussion now, whereas before it wasn't.
Yeah. If they don't make the I think Lonely gets fired if they don't make the playoffs. And I think the play-ins count in this.
Okay.
Scenario. Like, okay. If not for me, I don't think they're not the playoffs, but I think they are in the eyes of Kupchak. Because even when you hear Kupchak, sorry for the tangent here, when you hear Kupchak say our best player has been out the last 2 years. That's also Kupchak buying himself time, right? You know, there's an excuse layered in there, whether he thinks Hayward's the best player on the team or not. There's an excuse layered into that. And Borrego can do the same thing. It's like, oh man, yeah, we have a full year going Hayward. Maybe buys himself another year if things go poorly, or they don't make the proper playoffs. But if they miss the play-in altogether, I think he's 100% out. If they make the play-in, whether they perform well or not, I think he remains the coach.
Yeah. If they drop to the 11, that's massively disappointing. That would mean that Washington or New York passes us, which would be
That's a strong possibility. Well, not strong. That's a possibility.
It is a possibility. It's in play. Yeah. Washington's like what, one game back or something?
Yeah, they're right there. 29 wins, one is 32 wins. Like they're even the Knicks, they're not far off.
Yeah, they're knocking on the door. Tim, who you got number one?
I kind of have Mitch and JB vying for the one and the two spot. I agree with everything with Borrego. Way too conservative with lineups and rotations. Like, I remember his first year, he was rolling out some three-guard lineups with his man, Tony Parker, and I was like, wow, I mean, this guy's pretty innovative. He's not afraid to, you know, try stuff. And ever since then, he's just so beholden to playing a traditional big, you know, at least half of the game, and he loves these defensive guards for the backup unit, which has never really made a ton of sense to me. I also think that part of LaMelo floundering in the half court a lot of the time, some of that has to come down to the coach. It's just weird to see so little progress in that realm. And like, you know, when we're running, we do look great, as most teams do. But there doesn't seem to be a very coherent system in place a lot of the time.
Driving and dishing.
God, I mean, now teams know what we're doing. So no one even bothers, you know, collapsing the defense. So continue to do it. The 8-man max really throws me off. And you know, defensively, it's starting to the point where like we haven't had a top 15 defense with him at any point. Granted, we don't have a lot of those a lot of good defensive players, but some of that does have to come on the coach at a certain point. And yeah, wish he was able to just throw stuff at the wall. Maybe he's, you know, job security is a big part of it. You know, you don't want to get cooked with rookies in, but yeah, just really no imagination. And it took him like four games to figure out how to play the Cavs. You know, like those first two games, I mean, they just ran all over us and, you know, had no answer for it whatsoever. Seems slow to adjustment. Treats every game the same.
Yeah.
All right, and so, go ahead.
Sorry. Just to tack on to that, you know, you look at the overtime record, you look at the performance against the Nets, you know, that was a playoff game, man. We had the same record as them. That was at home. Had no business winning, don't get me wrong, but you expect a better showing. And you go back to the play-in, that team wasn't ready to play.
Yeah,
the players weren't good enough, and they weren't ready for whatever reason. They were not ready, which is frustrating, because when you look back to January, they looked like they fixed the defense. Like that stretch where they held Milwaukee and Philly to under 100 points, in back-to-back games, like, oh my god, this is the best off, like one of the best offenses in the league. If they can be somewhat competent defensively, this is a real problem for the rest of the league. You know, we could really make some damage here the rest of the season and maybe in the playoffs. That's gone. That's forever ago.
Yeah, it seems so long ago.
Yeah, it was so bright after January. Like me and Tim were coming on the podcast after we beat the Bucks and the Sixers. Just like, so like, who are we going to play in the finals, you know? we're kidding. But like,
and then you beat, obviously beat Detroit. Beat Milwaukee twice, beat Philly, and then lose to Orlando.
Yeah.
That loss hurts more than the wins felt. Like, it sank everything.
That was my most heartbreaking moment of the season, Sam. Okay. So that moment right there. Yeah, because like you said, like it was so high. We could have had like a 8-0 run where we would have like really set the league on fire with eight wins in a row. Instead, it's 7-1 and we lost to the Magic. Still very good, but just not as good as it could have been, right? And that's just kind of the story with the Hornets over the years. That's why we named the podcast Hornets and Heartbreak. So that's my most heartbreaking moment of the season. And after that stretch, it's been tough. It's been tough for the Hornets. It's been, like we said, 13-4 or 4-13 over the last 17 games. Definitely not 13-4.
If you told me we would have the same record as the Lakers this time of the year, I'd be like, oh, that's awesome. Didn't realize they would have also gone 3-14. One last thing to pile on Mitch a little more. the fact that he was so openly infatuated with Kai Jones before the draft, and that was like a very open thing. So I just don't think that that like was a really good way to show his hand. And he didn't get anything from Malik Monk. You know, it was pretty clear that we weren't going to re-sign him. Didn't do anything at the deadline with him. Didn't, you know, just let him walk for nothing. So
yeah.
But let him. I'm with you there. I hate that Malik left for nothing. Even outside the second round pick, just anything. Yeah. But that allowed them to sign Oubre on a really team friendly deal. Even like the Plumlee deal to get JT Thor higher up in the second round. That was an incredible piece of business. But I'm with you. Like I think the overall the offseason was pretty good, even with the benefit of hindsight. But the Monk thing, Monk's too good to leave for nothing. It's,
especially if you know, like, so okay, you're gonna replace him with James Bouknight, who doesn't play at all.
Yeah.
It's like, oh well that's great.
Just good, like Malik, man. Remember Malik one play? Like he would play like one game and then sit out the next six, play like 3 minutes, nothing for like two. It was just it was like this, man. It's just continuing the tradition.
We finally went through the growing pains just to give him to a team now that he's ready, and we get to do the entire thing over again with a less talented guy. It's awesome.
Yeah, they're the exact same player. Like they both play shooting guard. They both were drafted 11th. They both have off court issues. They're very very similar, except James Bouknight hasn't proven himself yet. When are we going to start talking about that draft? Like it wasn't good, because we got like A+ draft, you know, rankings by every like draft guru. Everyone's like the Hornets killed the draft. But like, I mean, our two first round picks just aren't playing. So I don't know. That's another knock on Kupchak, is that the two first round picks just haven't played. Yeah. What's your most heartbreaking moment of the season, Sam?
I mean, I'm still yours. It's the Magic one, because so as it happened, awful, right? After the game, everyone said, "Where are we going to learn from this?" It was a, you know, like they said all the right things that you want after, and they didn't learn.
Yeah,
they didn't learn, man. So like, it was bad as it happened, and we're still like feeling the ramifications of that, because they were going through these losses, and you think, okay, they went through it. They know not to look past their opponents. Lose to the Pistons, you know. It's like what is this, man? So
yeah,
again, this team, whether it's a focus, a fatigue, a tactic issue, like they're showing up to these games not ready. And again, that's how you end up 500, right? And at this point, be lucky to be 500.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to play a game of start, bench, cut. So I'm excited about this. This is, we have like basically four different segments of three players, and we're going to choose who to start, who to bench, and who to cut. The first one is Terry, Gordon, and Miles. I'm going to start Miles, bench Terry, and cut Gordon. That's a tough one. Those are like our three, maybe second through fourth best players on the team. I'm cutting Gordon for the injuries, and it's close between Miles and Terry. Maybe I should be starting Terry based off of how he's been playing recently, but I think Miles is just more important to the team overall in the long term.
Yeah. I'm starting Terry. I'm benching Miles. I'm cutting Gordon. Gordon's easy. He's not around anyway. So
yeah.
And I think just what Terry's doing right now is better than what Miles is able to do right now. So that's the difference maker. Plus, you know, he's too key in the fourth quarter.
Can I change my pick? I'm gonna change it. I'm gonna start Terry. He's been balling out recently.
You're such a coward. You can't change my pick. No, it's implemented, because I also have the same order as Sam. Since January 1st, Terry's been averaging 21, 5, and 5, 37% on three on 9 attempts per game. Most consistent scorer night in, night out, just does his job. He hasn't played less than 32 minutes in a game since January. So, whoa, durable guy. Definitely, you know, bench and Miles talked about the shooting. So I was looking up some lineup data for this. And of the 10 most common lineups that Miles is involved with, 5 are positive and 5 are negative. Out of the negative 5, 4 of them involve Gordon Hayward in there. Oof. When you swap out, they're about -1.5. And then if you swap them out with either PJ or Cody, they're +14. I think some of that has to do just with, you know, going up against other starting units as well. But I don't really buy the whole like Gordon Hayward is just this glue that hold, like, oh, if Gordon Hayward is healthy, we'd have 50 wins. And then if you really go back and look at the games that Gordon has missed this year, the first one was December 20th against Utah. That was our fifth game in 7 days playing against Utah. Don't think we were going to win that game, even if Gordon was fully healthy. Mm-hmm. The next game he missed, January 23rd against the Hawks. We shot 4-36 from three in that game. Gordon making two or three more threes was not going to change that game. Really, if you look throughout a lot of our schedule, there's like three or four games where maybe you could have swung it, but the record, I think, is inflating his actual value.
Yeah, there's that stat of like our wins and losses with Gordon and without Gordon. And I think like half of it is real, and then half of it is just random chance that like we're losing without Gordon. I mean, you just can't really look at those numbers and believe that he's like that important to our team. Yeah. But maybe like half of those games we win, or you know, a quarter of those games we win, but not as many.
If you're Mitch Kupchak on a podcast, you are definitely saying that though.
All right. So start, bench, cut: Montrezl Harrell, PJ Washington, Kelly Oubre. I'm starting PJ. He's been balling out recently. He's been playing pretty well. He had 17 in the game against the Celtics. Little side note, he was named player of the game. It's pretty sad when player of the game gets 17 and 4. And then benching Trez and cutting Kelly. I'm cutting Kelly Oubre. I loved him at the beginning of the year. I think Tim also loved him at the beginning of the year. We were coming around on him. We did not expect him to be that good at the start of the season. But just for the same reasons he's in my blame rankings, I'm pretty out on Kelly. I don't know. I'm not loving when he's in the game.
So I want to start Trez because it retweeted my podcast.
Ooh,
shout,
nice.
Shout out to Trez.
Nice.
Raymond Felton has some nice things to say about him when the trade happened. And I do like Trez.
Yeah, he's great.
I'm going to bench him. I'm starting PJ. I think PJ, the starter, is better than PJ, the bench player, when given his play style. And I think PJ is the best shooter on the team. Don't at me. Kelly.
Not Terry?
No, I think PJ has the best shot on the team. Like the best jumper on the team. And if he had the opportunity, like if we had a legit center that could do the dirty work and allow PJ to be that stretch four, I think he would have the best shooting percentage on the squad. Kelly, I'm cutting. We have no small forwards. Like that's a Kelly's way too inconsistent. I love Kelly, but he's way too inconsistent. And I think we have enough guys there that can fill the gap there without Oubre around. And I was an advocate of trading for him because his contract was trading him away. Not that he needed to leave, but because you know his contract, he was playing well, and his contract made him fit into the trade machine pretty nicely.
Gotcha.
Yeah, maybe trick a team. I'm starting PJ. I love the fact that he can play the four or the five. He's played 150 minutes as the four next to Plumlee, and they are plus 4.5 points per 100 possession. But then he has struggled as the lone five so far this year. We've, you know, no surprise, been getting killed on the boards. But I think out of all these guys, yeah, I would say he's the best shooter, the best defender, and sadly, probably the best passer. I believe in the shot as well. One weird thing I noticed in his rookie year, he shot 50% on corner threes, then down to 42, and now it's down to 33%. But every time he's taken one of those, I'm pretty confident. So I think if that number goes back up to around 40, 45, which isn't unreasonable for corner threes, I would say that the percentage will pop back up. And yeah, I've really, other than the fact that he just can't get to the line whatsoever, really love PJ's game.
Yeah, you have to. Well, go ahead.
I was going to say with PJ's like year-to-year numbers, like history's not going to be kind to him because came in as a starter, right, on a bad Hornets team. And then switch positions the second year. And now he's coming off the bench. It's a third different role in three different years. So like a lot's being thrown at him early on in his career from a versatility, which could pay off long-term, getting exposed to different roles and responsibilities. Like I like the idea, like banking these years with PJ and see what it becomes in year five or six. But yeah, I'm with you. I agree.
I was going to say like that. PJ's start to the season was disappointing when we were winning games, but since we've been losing, like him and Terry have been the two players who I think have like actually stepped up in that stretch and been playing better. I texted Tim the other night, like PJ needs to shoot more often. His 3-point attempt rate is pretty high. It's the highest of his career. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I know he's taking
61% of his shots are from three.
Yeah. And that's great. But like maybe take more of them, right? Like be more involved offensively. That's my critique of PJ is that he just needs to do more.
I think PJ's destiny, if I had to guess, he's going to be not like Robert Covington as far as play-wise, but I think that he's going to be on a bunch of good teams. And I think that teams are always going to be like, man, if we just get PJ Washington to shore up like as a third big, we're going to be awesome. And he's just always going to be on like a bunch of three seeds, four seeds, but like will always be a little disappointing if he's on your team. But I feel like he'll always get talked about, you know, like in high reverence.
Yeah, I think his ceiling's like Siakam, which is really good. Like, I
really?
Think, yeah, if PJ, like, I think he checks all the boxes and could be a Siakam in the league.
Yeah, if he could just dribble the ball. So one thing that's really holding him back.
All right, the next one's pretty interesting. We got the three rookies, JT Thor, Kai Jones, James Bouknight. JT Thor has been the best rookie so far, so I'm starting him. I'm benching James Bouknight just because I think he has more potential than Kai Jones with this team, and I'm cutting Kai Jones. It's hard to pick one of them to cut because, like, you love the potential, of course, of all of the young players, right? And, like, I don't want any of them to leave right now, but you got to pick one. So I picked Kai Jones.
So I'm starting JT. Like, he has an NBA body already, and he can't even drink yet. he's a willing shooter, like a guy that inexperienced, willing to take an open shot. Like, I like that. That means he'll get better at it. And he's really competent on defense. I'm here for it. With the size and his length, he could do a lot of different things on the floor. I'm benching Kai Jones and cutting Bouknight. I was pushing for them to trade that 11th pick when they had it. Because I remember Mitch saying this and the players saying we need more veterans and they didn't need any more young players coming into this mix. The idea of more experience, fewer losses is kind of what they're talking about, right? If they're really serious about making playoffs, pulling the trigger on, I don't know what kind of deals are available, obviously. So we don't know. But even now, like flipping Bouknight for somebody who will play is something they should really consider. So in this scenario, yeah. And then Kai, we have a future pick invested in him because we traded to get back into the first round to take him. So plus Kai Jones, his size and athleticism, I think he has a higher upside than Bouknight anyway, especially with the way the league's going, if Kai can develop a jumper.
Yeah, I have the same order. I actually feel how your Siakam comp, that's how I feel with JT Thor. He is just so big, can cover so much ground, defense. Because, like, you know, Siakam started off as more like a defensive guy, then, you know, rounded out his offensive game. I think Thor, I mean, there's just a ton of guys in the league that you could see him becoming. As long as he can just hit a three, I mean, he's going to be in the league for a long time. I think he's awesome. I'm benching Kai as well. I'm a big Kai believer, baby Giannis. Actually, the Celtics game kind of made me think about it. Like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities he could be as good as Robert Williams in 2 years.
Yeah, honestly, he should just be studying Robert Williams tapes, honestly.
Yeah, just like
doing,
the way...
Doing that.
Whew, man, yeah, some of those alley-oops from Williams where, like, he doesn't have to bend his knees. He's just way above the rim, so athletic. I don't think that, you know, you can't teach that. And I think the shot is pretty ugly right now, but he will at least take it. He has some shot selection issues. But, down the line, I'm really into Kai. Just such a physical freak, man. Bouknight, let's say things do work out for Bouknight and he reaches, like, his 80th percentile outcome. Like, that's probably Jordan Clarkson, like, which is cool. But, like, you know, he's most likely never going to be a primary ball handler. Seems like a bench guard. Just maybe he'll be the next Lou Williams, which is cool, but not necessarily what you're, like, doing backflips over with the 11th pick.
Yeah, isn't it funny that the draft order is, like, the inverse of our start bench cut, right? Like, we're starting the player we drafted last.
Yo, we're Scotty Lewis, cutting. Man. Scotty,
yeah. Yeah, we'll have to throw him on there. He can start too, I guess. he can be the star. We'll do star, start, go. Bench cut. Scotty Lewis could be the star. Almost forgot about it. You guys sold me. I'm switching my order. I'm benching James.
You're such a I'm yeah, just no resolve whatsoever, man.
I think that position is, like, probably the most replaceable at secondary guard.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, so next up, we got Jalen McDaniels, Cody Martin, and Mason Plumlee. This is probably the darkest one of the three, and I'm starting Jalen, and I'm cutting both Cody and Mason. Just kidding. No. I'm cutting Cody and I'm benching Mason. So Cody Martin, I've just had enough of the Cody Martin experience, man. Like I said, offensively, he's just basically like nothing. He can hit open shots sometimes, but not since Christmas. And he kills our offense. I mean, you could also make an argument to cut Mason. It's definitely close between those two. But if we cut Mason, we don't have a center. So he still is like valuable to the team. If I think about the team without Mason Plumlee or without Cody Martin, I'd rather have it without Cody Martin. And Jalen's been good this year, actually. So I'm kind of in on Jalen McDaniels if he wasn't hurt.
I think you're looking at Cody the wrong way. You got to realize that Cody Martin is like gas station wine. You know, like you're not expecting a great, like classy bottle, but it gets the job done. You know, yeah. Like it's a low bar. He's an energy guy. I like Cody.
And it takes the charge.
Yeah.
Just like the wine takes a charge.
Who you got?
I'm cutting Jalen. I'm starting Cody and I'm benching Mason. Like, whoa. I think, so I'll start with Jalen. I like Jalen McDaniels. I don't know what his position is. And I don't know like where like he forecasts in the league. I think he's good off the bench. He's really active. Can hit a shot. I don't really feel great about it all the time. And he has improved since he's been in Charlotte. But between the three of them, I don't know where he fits. I can't see him on the floor in the playoff scenario. I can see Cody and I can see Mason in the playoffs, like with mixed results, obviously. But I think I can see Cody and Mason out there. Mason because of the need and Cody because of the defense. So, yeah, what I say. Yeah, Cody starting Mason off the bench or on the bench. And then I'm cutting McDaniels. Plus, again, I think Cody is a better perimeter option than Jalen McDaniels. He's too small to help on the rebounding side, interior defense side. Like, not short, small. And at least Mason can occupy some space.
I like your point about, like, Cody, like, has an elite, like, attribute. He plays elite defense, whereas Jalen McDaniels is just kind of, like, okay at everything.
Yeah,
right?
So, like,
that's fair.
He's but a better specialist. Jalen's maybe better all around, honestly. But I think when we're looking after bench, I think he wants specialists. To come in those specific scenarios. Now, the issue is, like, those guys come out and play 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, we're overexposed here.
Yeah, I just would rather have Jalen McDaniels out there than Cody Martin. Like, they play similar positions, right? They both are kind of the three. Jalen can maybe be a four. And I just would rather see McDaniels out there. I do trust his shot more than Cody's. You mentioned that he has kind of a shaky shot. I think he's shooting, like, 37% though on the year. Probably not a massive sample size, but he does hit threes, and his length is something that, you know, he's still like a project. Like he could turn into a legit player. I think he's been out recently and that's been hurting us. So I would rather have Jalen McDaniels than Cody.
I started Cody, bench Jalen, cut Mason. Sam said Mason's best attribute is he's on the court.
He fills space. Yeah, he's a space filler.
Exactly. That's a high praise for Mason Plumlee.
You see him run the floor, man. He's like Jokic.
Oh, that's my Jokic, that's my man. Biggest that's my biggest pet peeve. When he takes five dribbles on a fast break, you're just like, please. Especially with, like, you know, he looks right at LaMelo. He's like, nah, not a good option. Terry, nah. Miles, nah.
The opposing team is like, all right, just slowly backs away because you know he's not going to shoot it.
He's like, oh, luckily I took up 10 seconds of the clock. I like Jalen. I think that if he were, as you said, he's really thin and he hasn't really put on a lot of weight since he's come into the league. He kind of reminds me of Terrence Jones. If you guys remember him, he used to play on the Rockets in like the mid 2010s out of Kentucky. Yeah, okay. Out of Kentucky. Where it's like he had all these like interesting things that he could do, but could never really put it all together. I never really trust Mason or Jalen's jump shot. I feel like a good 10% of his shots are banked in unintentionally. But yeah, I just think that if he ever did kind of put it together, I think he could be a menace on help defense with how long he is, how quick he is. But yeah, I don't think he's ever going to be more than like a 10th man.
All right. You heard it here first. Jalen McDaniels making the leap next season. He's my guy. He's my guy. I'm starting him.
You know what? I know. I want him in Toronto for some reason. I feel like Toronto would get the most out of Jalen.
Oh, man. Nah, he's staying in Charlotte.
They love guys like that, man. They would love guys like
they run him at the five, dude. They have him, Siakam, and Anobi Barnes out there. That would be a sick lineup.
All right, Sam, do you think the Hornets are going to make the postseason? Maybe you can give us like a percentage chance of that. And then of the top teams, which would you most want us to play?
So I think they 100% make the play-in.
Okay.
As far as that goes, so if it ended to the season ended today, they play Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
And then it'd be like the Nets and the Cavs, not the Cavs, Raptors.
Yep.
So you're just playing the matchups. I think the Nets will probably catch the Cavs in the East, just the way that, I mean, now that KD's back and Kyrie is. Who knows what happened with Kyrie? And then the Ben Simmons, big old question mark. We'll see what happens with that.
I think that's out of the East.
Oh, you haven't won in the East?
Yeah. That's my take.
I could see, like, in general, like, Heat, Bucks, Sixers. I don't think it's Bulls year this year. And the Nets, I could see doing it. But yeah, I think the Nets catch the Raptors and find their way, and catch the Raptors and the Cavs and find their way to the sixth seed. So I think it's be some type of mix between the Raptors, Cavs, Hornets, and Hawks in the play-in. And I'm hoping we get the Hawks. Hoping we get the Raptors. That's all. I'm afraid of the Cavs. The Cavs are too nice. Garland's too nice. Mobley's my favorite rookie. That's not JT Thor.
You're getting Mark heated right now. He just has a vendetta against the Cavs. They're just total fakes. I'm with you, Sam.
Yeah, I always hear all how Garland's so good, Jared Allen's so good. Like, when the All-Star discussion was happening, I was like, dude, LaMelo's better than both these dudes. Put LaMelo in the All-Star game over him. So in terms of, like, percentage, I put it at 30% that we make, like, the actual playoffs, right? Because, okay. We'll probably have to win two games, which just the odds of that happening is 25% mathematically, right? But, like, there's a chance that we somehow pass the Nets and move into the eight, where we would only have to win one of two games. So I'm looking at it. I'm doing big numbers here. I'm saying 30%. I'm looking at it mathematically.
I know I would take the over. I think I would take the over at 30. I didn't give a number, but I like that. I would do the over. Not much over. Probably 35-ish. Probably where I kind of cap out at. But yeah. No, I respect it. I like that.
Tim, what do you think?
I'm under. I'm putting in about a 20% chance. I have little to no faith in us winning back-to-back games.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, making the eight seed is so important. And the way we came out against the Nets, you mentioned that earlier, Sam, like, just atrocious. Like, we needed to win that game. We needed to be trying to claw our way into the eight seed. And it's just not going to – it doesn't look like it's going to happen. Also, making the nine seed would be sick, just to get a home game for the play-in. That would be awesome. And I don't think we're going to do that either. I think we're going to be the 10 seed, and we're going to have to win two games in a row. Same thing as last year. Dark, dark times, boys. Dark times.
Yeah, the thought of Big Jim coaching against Nick Nurse in a win-or-go-home game, don't really like our chances on that.
No, wait, you hear that? VanVleet just hit another shot. He's going to tear us up in the plane if we play the Raptors. Oh, man.
Yeah, he's going to remember that 40-point ass-whooping we gave him 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. We were at that game. That game was awesome. Like you said, it felt like we were about to claw back. The All-Star break. Now we're about to be well-rested. We're about to go on a little run. Nope. All right, Tim, you have that off-the-wall question. Tim texted me this yesterday. We didn't tell you about this one, Sam. I don't think you need too much prep, but it's just a funny question Tim's got for us.
Who is the NBA player most likely to pull a Calvin Ridley and get caught gambling on games?
Okay, man. Oh, De'Aaron Fox.
Fox. See, I was thinking about him. Yeah, with the NFT.
He showed his ass with the NFT stuff. And so, you know, if there's anyone to bend the rules a little bit and do something a little below the lines, I could see De'Aaron Fox is my choice. Plus, like, if Sacramento is, first off, you're in Sacramento, not a lot of people paying attention to those games, right? Mm-hmm. And so if he's like doing some point shaving and for at some random home game on a Tuesday in Sacramento, who's going to notice? Nobody.
Yeah, they lose by 30. People's going to be like, Kang's going to Kang's.
Yeah. And he's good. And he's good enough to affect it too. Like, he's the second best player on that team now. So, I'm going De'Aaron Fox.
I'm going James Harden. We all know what he does, you know, off the court. He likes to party. So I could see him just getting drunk one night and being like, oh, I can gamble on games. And
little baby text, I'm like, hey, man.
Also, he's had some sketchy performances in the postseason. You heard it here first.
That's where he's made his real money. See, I put too much time into this, too much thought. And what I'm thinking is, it wouldn't be a major star because there's too much guaranteed money on the line in the NBA. So, Harden's already got, over $300 million. He's not going to risk that on, some parlays. So then I was thinking, he's got one of the worst deals in the league, but it's also a starter. So, who's on the most team-friendly deal? I'm going with Lu Dort. He's got a $5.5 million deal. Even Scottie Pippen thought was a bad deal. I mean, just brutal. He's playing, arguably their third best player, second best player. He's playing significant minutes. And if Lu Dort goes 1 for 9, no one's really batting an eye. And I don't know. Malachi Flynn really just gave me trouble tonight, man. I don't know what was going on. I don't know how he got 30. I think that Lu Dort could pull that off. And I think he should based on that deal. That is robbery.
Yeah, I like what y'all are talking about with the small market teams. Nobody's paying attention. Yeah. Nobody's noticing if Oklahoma City drops a game by 30 and Lu Dort, like you said, goes 1 for 9. Yeah, I like that. I like that. So, Sam, it's been great having you. Tell us about your podcast and what's it like working with Raven Felton? How's that been, man?
Yeah, so we are 4 or 5 episodes in. So the podcast is called Believe in Hornets. Started at the beginning of last season, December of last year. It was myself and Muggsy Bogues. Muggsy left the show in May. Basically, that whole year was so weird. basically, a week before the season ended. That helps. Muggsy had basically other stuff to do. There's no controversy. Anything. The world was opening up at that point compared to how things were previously. And he had other stuff to do. And I love Muggsy. He was the greatest. It's the coolest dude I've ever spoken to in my entire life. So shout out Muggsy. But I was doing the show. Out. Say again?
Sorry to interrupt you. He's got a book coming out.
Oh, yeah. And he had a NBA TV documentary come out recently, too. So yeah, he's a very interesting dude. And it was cool to talk to him about point guards, given LaMelo Ball being a Hornet, a new Hornet at the time. And so, yeah, I was doing the show alone up until a month and a half ago, basically. Raymond Felton joined. We were paired together. I didn't hit him up. It was an arranged marriage. And it's been great, I can text Raymond Felton. That's really weird. If I'm like, hey, man. When the Hornets traded for Harrell, I was like, yo, what you think? Just texting him. So it's been great. We don't hear a lot from him on a regular basis. So it's cool to bring him back into the internet culture, basically. And he can give us thoughts on current things in the league because he's played with a lot of these guys. His last game, speaking of the Thunder, was with the Thunder for this game. The Dame Lillard shot. Oh, he was on the bench when that happened. He played, that was his last NBA game, So he's been teammates with Paul George and Russell Westbrook. He's played against Giannis and LeBron. So he has that new perspective, having only been in the league only a few years ago. So, again, just like Muggsy, super cool, super down to earth. He's not big. Because he's a former player. He's not in it to trash other guys, So he told me when we first talked that he wanted to be the opposite of Stephen A. Smith. He didn't want to hot take people to death because, they share a bond, former and current players. So hopefully, speaking of former players, we get some former teammates of his, whether they're from UNC or from the Bobcats days. We talked about his Bobcats run in the last episode from his time at UNC, declaring for the draft, that draft process, being in the draft with 3 other UNC players, Sean May himself, Marvin Williams
and
Rashawn McCants. Yeah. That process, playing for Larry Brown, playing 1-on-1 against Michael Jordan when he's the owner. So it's a lot of cool stuff. And so, yeah, we do it every Monday, new episodes every Monday on all platforms. And then the YouTube version, the video version is on my channel.
Awesome.
Tuesdays, Tuesday mornings.
Say the name of your YouTube channel for the people.
Yeah, youtube.com/SamDracula takes you right there. If you search Sam Dracula, you'll find it. There's some emo kids around. I don't know what's going on with that, but maybe probably Dracula. Hey, when your name's Sam Smith, it gets real difficult to be found online. So I had to switch it to Sam Dragler.
All right, we got one more question for you. Last year, you changed the name of your dog to Monk when Monk had that like 36 point game against the Heat.
Yeah.
Is your dog still named Monk?
Yep, it's still there. Okay. Still on the tag. Monk signed a 1-year deal, man.
Bring him back.
Well, I'd feel terrible if I took it off the dog tag and he came back to Charlotte. So I'm giving him a year. He has a 1-year vacation in LA. And we'll see what happens this summer. Maybe he comes back. What if he comes back, takes that number one again, and it pisses all the Melo fans off? That'd be hilarious.
Great.
Oh, that would be so funny. Yeah. Melo's like, I can't get one still. do you call him Monk?
No, because he's at the time he was my dog is four was four at the time. Like, I can't change his name. Yeah. But I went to PetSmart, paid like the $17 to get the updated dog tag with Monk on it. So it's awesome. Still there. The dog's in the other room because we're recording. But yeah, it's there. It'll remain there until next season comes around, until he lands on a new team or signs a multi-year deal. And then maybe, you know, depending on what happens, may add book night to the tag. Who the hell knows?
Yeah, we'll have to see. Maybe
spoiler alert, probably not.
All right, man. It's been great having you. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Sam.